Well, good morning. Welcome to House Resources. Time is 09:03. Next up, we will have start addressing amendments on SB 138. The next one to be addressed is DOT 91. And that will be amendment number 27. Since it's my amendment, I'll move amendment number 2728-GS2806 /I.A.91.
Object for discussion, sir.
There's been an objection. This is a this is where we combined a couple of amendments from previously. And what it requires of the Commissioner of Revenue is a basically to come back to the legislature with a report on the full range of financing options regarding state acquisition of an ownership interest and participation in the North Slope Natural Gas Project. It also, perhaps you can describe the backside for page 2, Representative Hawker, since that was...
And thank you, Mr. Chair. This gets into the, I believe it's the Section 60 information that's to be included in the development of that plan for a public participation through ownership of some sort in the pipeline project. And what we've done with this is merged both of our concerns, having this done by the elements to be included in the plan that I was concerned with, the buyer beware provisions, are now added and inserted into Section 60, which are, you know, concerns that I've got. We want to be sure is that project or this proposal to bring that opportunity before the public is brought forward in a light that fully discloses all of the risks, the financial risks and obligations and burdens that it might entail as well. Ownership entails risks, and I want to be sure that all those risks are on the table as any sort of a proposal is brought forward.
And back on the front page, line 16, is where we require an interim draft of the report due at the first day of the next regular session of the legislature. That was a suggestion from the Department of Revenue that we incorporated into the amendment. Further discussion on amendment number 27. President Parker, do you maintain your objection?
I am happy to remove my objection to amendment number 27.
Any further objections? Representative Tarr for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wondered if the administration wanted to comment on this at all.
Representative Tarr through the chair, Mike Pulowski, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue for the record, just to say appreciate the willingness of the committee to work with the administration. We think this amendment works for us and includes, as Representative Hawker said, some of the important extra clarifications for consumer protection as we bring the second part of the report home. So we think it's a good amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so I just want to make sure. So what we've amended the bill to include are the financial briefings and then also these reports, and all of these still sync up with, for example, the municipal taxation advisory board, and reports and everything, you know, are not overlapping or interfering kind of timelines?
Representative Tarr through the chair, no. Actually, I think we've got a good progression of the reports from the municipal advisory group to an interim draft to a final as we bring the contracts back. So there'll be a regular updating of information from members as we are also doing some of the confidential briefings. But.
Any further discussion? Any further objections to amendment number 27? with that amendment number 27 has passed. Next up will be dot 97.
What's
that?
Record.
We reconvene. Okay, I will move amendment number 28-GS2806/I.A.97.
I'll object for discussion, sir.
Okay, and this is an amendment from myself and Representative Hawker. Again, a combination of two amendments.
Dot 97.
Yeah. Okay. And starting in page one, line seven, these duties that we're talking about are the duties of the Oil and Competitiveness Review Board, which was an element of SB 21 last year. It adds to that review board on page two, starting at line 16. A requirement for an additional report due on January 15th, 2017, basically seeking to take a look at the state's tax structure and rates on all the basically on everything south of 68 degrees north latitude, so everything excluding the North Slope. And this is to address some potential concerns in Cook Inlet that will start to arise starting in about 2018. So,
Mr. Chair, if I might,
Representative Hawker, if you'd like to add to that.
And I would just put on the record at this point, if we go back into previous testimony in this committee when we talked about the pieces that were merged, it was your previous dot 18 and my previous dot 54 that were merged into this, which again we found a great and efficient and effective way forward to have these other areas of the states looked at with an appropriate lead time and with appropriate direction to the administration to come up with the information that I think is really important, so that as we see the convergence of tax structures that will occur in basically 2022, we have sufficient lead time to consider their effects and look and make sure that we are not going to compromise what we've accomplished in particularly the revitalization of the Cook Inlet and the incentivization of Middle Earth between now and then.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Pawlowski, Mr. Balash, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Pawlowski again for the record. I just appreciate Representative Hawker linking back to the previous record of testimony, which I believe provides the guidance to the department as we support the Competitiveness Review Board in bringing back these recommendations. We had a healthy dialogue at the table, and I believe the amendment reflects a good merger.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to make sure I'm understanding completely, the II on page 19 is a tax structure that takes into account, and then on line 22 is III, a reduction in gross value of point of production. So this analysis will include all options, not limited to gross value at point of production scenarios. Is that correct?
You referring to page 19?
No, page 2 of the bill, line 19.
Line 19. Okay.
I'm sorry if that wasn't clear.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawker.
The point of these provisions was that as we move into a SB 21 world, which is structured around a flat production tax at 35%, and where we look at creating production incentives where it's appropriate through GVRs. Item two is to recognize that as we look forward to creating those GVRs, that you take into account the unique circumstances of each of those areas south of 68 degrees north, item 3 does talk that we want to specifically discuss those GVRs and go to item 4, and then with the other incentives, which would completely, and again, it's to give the department complete latitude in considering just that, other incentives, not only a GVR for in their examination that's due on January 15th, 2017.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to get that clarification.
Okay. See further discussion from the committee on amendment number 28?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd just like to make a clarification of words. I believe I referred to these as 2, 3, and 4. It's really dot double I, dot double triple I, and IV in the Roman numeral.
Duly noted. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember the other day we had a little bit of discussion about the unique economic circumstances language. But I guess I see that's sticking with that language here. Was there any response from you on that? I'm just trying to remember what the issue was the other day in the previous amendment that we considered.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, the dialogue we had around the unique economic circumstances was multifaceted. At the primary level, I think we first described how the department and the Competitiveness Review Board need to examine clearly the in-state energy role that Middle Earth and the Cook Inlet Basin play. Second, that there are very different circumstances within terms of access to infrastructure underlying each of those producing regions. So Middle Earth, for example, has very, very many different basins that we will need to look at. Each one may present different challenges or opportunities to supporting development in those regions. But as we had the dialogue at the table the other day, it was really those two combinations that we need to tailor it for each specific place.
Representative Kelsire.
Thank you. And Roman numeral II talks about the unique economic circumstances for oil producing gas areas. And so I understand it's inclusive of everything that's south of 60th degree and Prudhoe Bay, so including Middle Earth. These aren't currently oil and gas producing areas, so is that just understood that potential oil and gas?
So, panelists?
Middle Earth. Mr. Chairman, it's not, but it's, I mean, there's a lot of work going on in the Doyon Basin, for instance, and in your Copper River Basin.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, first, with all of the work that this committee and other members have done, we certainly hope that there will be production, but I think the key is that those areas are subject to the oil and gas production tax, so it's designed around that concept. We read it as it would be applying to all of them.
Okay, further discussion? Representative Hawkins,
Chair. Mr. Chair, I remove my objection to amendment number 28.
Okay, the objection has been removed. Any further objection to amendment number 28? Hearing none, amendment number 28 passes. Next up will be dot 95. That will be amendment number 29.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 29.
Sure. There's been an objection. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we heard from Roger Marks, one of the concepts that was brought up was characterized as the most favored nation, this idea that if we would contract with one of the other project sponsors to market and sell our gas, that we would want them to sell our gas at the same price that they sell theirs for. So after many go-arounds and lots of discussion with the administration, I believe they support this amendment, and we've worked with them in drafting the language, kind of even in what part of the bill it's in. So now, if you look at the language, it's about in the section about the choice about our royalty gas, and so the amendment right now, as it's rewritten, is a trigger on the commissioner's finding that taking RIK would be in our best interest. Excuse me. It's written as a double negative. It would not be in our best interest to take our royalty in value if the producer has committed to dispose or market our gas on the same terms and conditions as their own. So it's a little bit hard to read that double negative, but that's what it is in concept and in the section of the bill that the administration supported.
And Representative Potter.
And thank you. And I concur, the double negative creates an affirmative. However, this affirmative is also, it creates one case where, I want to make sure I understand what you're doing here. It creates one case where there's an affirmative, and that affirmative is that basically RIK can be used if the lessee agrees to dispose or commit of our royalty gas taken in kind on the same terms and conditions as they market their own. However, as written, this does not preclude the administration from other decisions, but this is carving out one specific case that makes an absolute certainty out of on the same terms and conditions, but it does not preclude necessarily preclude making reaching the same conclusion through other means.
That is my understanding, and I'll let Commissioner Designee Balash, if through the chair, Mr. Chairman, if he has anything to add.
Mr. Balash.
Good morning. For the record, Joe Balash, Commissioner Designee for Department of Natural Resources. I think that Representative Tarr has characterized our concerns and position on this accurately. This language, the concept certainly is consistent with the agreement in the heads of agreement with the other parties. That said, it has been a challenge to engage each of those other parties on this particular topic because everybody freaks out when you start talking about pricing and marketing arrangements. And so if this amendment were to be adopted by this committee, I fully expect to continue the round-robin engagement with each of the parties, and there may be a need to refine the language in the next committee of referral further, and that's something I would keep members here apprised of. The most important thing, however, I want to amplify what Representative Hawker spoke to, and that is we need to maintain the option. That this needs to be a decision that we make in deciding whether or not to rely on the terms and conditions provided by the lessees. There may be very important circumstances under which we would want to pursue an arrangement independently of them. And if we don't have that flexibility, I think it would be a disservice.
Do you believe the amendment is written? Gives you that flexibility?
Mr. Chairman, we believe it does.
Okay. Other questions from committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, or Designee, you said that maybe the wording needs to be worked on a little bit by the next committee. Does that mean that we should do something now, or what did you exactly mean by that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, what I'm attempting to convey is that the conversations that we have had outside of the committee here with the other parties to the HOA, specifically Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips, has been a little bit of a moving target because we first started talking about A.61 on Friday, and we got A.95 yesterday. Distributed and able to be reviewed. And while the conversations I've had with each company, they are fine with the concept, actually getting these things reviewed through the various functions in those companies takes a little time. So we may need to wordsmith a little bit, but the concept is sound. It's consistent with the agreement that we've all come to understand with regard to each individual lessee working with the state individually, so there's no collusion in this country or another. And so.
Okay, thank you.
And, and Commissioner, obviously we're probably not going to get through the rest of the amendments today, so if something comes up in the next day or two before the bill leaves the committee, if you would make us aware of that and we can address it. I'd prefer to address it before it leaves the committee rather than...
As would I.
Leaving it to the next. Let's see, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just was going to comment on the review process, because we did have an amendment drafted originally, and then in conversations with the administration, had them come back to us with a redraft that went to Ledge Legal, and so that's where the sort of finessing has taken place. So with that back and forth, I hope we could, you know, if there's something that needs to be worked a little bit more, that's good, and we can accomplish that.
Okay, further discussion on Amendment Number 29. Representative Sadler, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Objection's been removed. Is there any further objection to Amendment Number 29? Amendment Number 29 has passed. Next up would be DOT 98. And that will be Amendment Number 30. Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chair, I move Amendment Number 30.
Object.
There's been an objection for discussion, I'm sure, Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chair, it's a simple little amendment.
That means 2 hours.
Mr. Chair, this amendment goes back to the very early presentation date for the days of this bill process in our committee, when we were looking at the administration was presenting to us the various tax components, and we were discussing how this bill would impact and affect our apportionment factors for apportioning corporate income tax to the state of Alaska. There was a well-established provision that included the tax on gas being taken in payment of production taxes in the extraction factor of that apportionment formula, which involves, you know, extraction, it involves also a sales factor. And it was stated by the agency that they were working on the issue with the sales factor. They knew they needed to tune that up a bit. And what we have here is an amendment that makes certain that the taxes gas is excluded from the sales factor when taken in conjunction. We have necessarily included it in the extraction factor. The idea was to not include it in the sales factor, and that's really what is accomplished here in the first part. And the second part is clarifying that intercompany sales and transfers are not part of a tariff and thereby not part of a sale. To further explain in detail, I'd turn to the administration, but from the conceptual standpoint, it's really pretty simple and straightforward. The operations of these things, as always, are a little more complex.
Yeah, no, Mr. Pulaski nodding his head vigorously in agreement. So, Mr. Pulaski.
Mr. Chairman, this one, I appreciate the time, feels like the ultimate geek amendment. We've been working on this one through several iterations of the bill. I appreciate this committee taking the time to discuss it. Representative Hawker did a very good job of explaining sort of the derivation of the problem. And just to re-summarize for the committee, when the department included in the original legislation the idea that taxes gas needs to be included in the extraction factor for calculating corporate income tax, that includes it in the business activity that goes on in the state and ensure that it's accurately reflected. Well, if you turn to page 1 of the amendment, line 16, numeral II explains that that tax as gas delivered to the state, the Department of Revenue will not construct or deem a sale of it. Remember, that gas is being given to the state of Alaska. It's just clarifying that in the future, an auditor or the department will not say, you gave that gas to the state as payment of tax, but we're going to call it a sale, because it actually wasn't a sale. It was a payment of tax. And it was just to clarify, because we called it out in the extraction factor, how it will be treated in the sales factor. The next one is clarifying current treatment. Fees on an intercompany basis are not subject as a sale. A regulated tariff is. And what I'd point out further to members is there are conforming changes on page 2 of the amendment, lines 10 through 15. The way the sales factor works is there's a numerator and a denominator, and it's consistent language in both the numerator and the denominator. It's really meant to clarify as a result of the specific designation of the tax gas and the extraction factor, the limited inclusion in our apportionment factors for corporate income tax.
Further discussion? Representative Seed.
Thank you. Is this affecting the tariff that is charged by the operator of the state's 25% of the line? Is that where this impacts, or is this strictly on the corporate tax of the parties that are producing gas?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is specifically the corporate income tax of the parties that are producing gas or their affiliates within the midstream. And it's clarifying, consistent with the way we treat it today. And so we're not changing anything about the way the state does corporate income tax. This just becomes necessary because in the previous section we specifically called out that we were including taxes, gas, and the extraction factor, which would increase corporate income tax liability in the state. We need to be careful about belt, suspenders, boots, and waders for the other portions in our apportionment factor to protect against changes in interpretation down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Representative Kawasaki.
I don't really understand this amendment, but can we just start with some definitions under I-2? I mean, I-I, what are constructive and deemed sales, and what are you taking as natural gas delivered to the state?
Representative Kawasaki, through the state, the natural gas delivered to the state as payment of tax. So this is the tax as gas. A producer would have, so it's the gas that they pay to the state. Constructive or deemed is a term of art in the corporate income tax world, where the state would look at the transfer of that gas to the state as a payment, and it's saying that the producer who paid tax with that gas is not actually selling the gas, because then the value would be included in their sales factor. It's not a sale. It's a transfer as a payment of tax to the state. It's just a clarifying amendment.
Okay, further discussion? Representative Sadler, do you move your objection to the tax geek amendment?
I move my objection to amendment 30.
Can't we talk about it a little while longer?
No, Representative Walker, we may not. Are there any further objections to amendment 30? Hearing none, amendment 30 has passed. You know things are getting complicated when the next one up is dot 101. Does everyone have a copy of dot 101?
I don't.
Can we take a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. All right, we are back on the record, and change of plans. We'll move dot 101 to the bottom of the pile. And next up will be dot 50. This will be amendment number 31. And Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move amendment number 31. That is IA.50.
Object to 50.
There's been an objection, Representative Seaton. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment comes to the point that was brought to us by the municipalities that the filth or reclassification, restructure of the property tax shouldn't go into effect unless the final investment decision is made. Otherwise, we could have a change in taxes that could have further implications to municipalities, and we wouldn't have the project go forward. So that's the only thing this is saying, is that PILTS would be, or whatever is negotiated would be there once the final investment decision is made, so that the project is going to move forward. So we don't have consequences in municipal property taxes that don't correspond with the project going forward, and that's what this amendment does.
Any discussion on amendment number 31? Representative Hawker?
My question on this is, certainly I appreciate the intent, but again, I'm getting back to my concerns about constraining the negotiation process with an artificial constraint that may or may not be appropriate for those municipalities. In that a PILT will be necessarily the result of a negotiation amongst the affected communities and the state, and any PILT has to come back before the state of Alaska, the legislature, for approval as part of this process. Why would we constrain the negotiating process when we are still holding the absolute hammer over any outcome from that? I guess, you know, that would be my concern and question.
Representative Zeden?
And, Mr. Chairman, the reason is because it was brought to us that we did this before under the Stranded Gas Act, that if we had approved that contract and the project didn't go forward, it would have changed the calculations and the method of payment of municipal property taxes without getting a project. So this is just making sure that whatever is negotiated is negotiated on the basis of a project, and if the project doesn't happen, we're not changing the municipal property tax based on something that doesn't occur.
And Mr. Pulaski, want to respond to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, Mike Pulaski, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue. The implication of this amendment that we would have a contract that would affect municipal taxes makes the department very uncomfortable. And it's the intent we understand, I think we appreciate, as Representative Hawker described. I think the deeper concern I have with the amendment is you could read this amendment as an implication that the administration has the power to authorize a payment in lieu of tax in a contract. As we've testified before, we do not believe we have that power. Changes to municipal taxation are provided by law according to the Alaska Constitution. So it's more of a fundamental implication that somebody would believe we have the power to do this. As we've described, the property tax changes for the process will go through the consensus working group with the municipalities, come back to this legislature for statutory changes based on a consensus recommendation from that group. Only then would I believe that there would be the opportunity to authorize something related to a municipality in their property tax. The idea that the state through contract could change a municipal tax rate, I believe at this stage flies counter to the Constitution. And so it's more of that silent implication that gives me discomfort with this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Representative Seaton, then Kalsak.
Thank you. Legal does not agree that this is authorizing you to change taxes. That is a separate issue that is not raised here. This is a prohibition on the coming back to us with a contract that would do this, but it doesn't say that you can contract property taxes. So the
the restriction or the sideboard does not mean that everything inside of that, outside of that sideboard is appropriate. And we had that testimony from Don Bollock here the other day on a different amendment. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think that it's pretty clear to us that we want to get back a contract to us that doesn't have that flaw in it that Stranded Gas Development Act had if we would have passed that contract. And so that was the testimony that this committee received, and so that's what this amendment intends to do, is just make sure we don't get into a box. And of course we do set the property tax on oil and gas as a state, and municipalities, we allow them to take some of that, but it's not directly the municipalities that are doing that. We set that on the through in the state, and we do that in the legislature.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you. And I think this addresses some of the discomfort I've had with with this concept that taxes could be locked in and municipalities might get shut out. And I understand it's not the intent of the administration to do so, but under this provision 305023, it kind of bumps, in my mind, it bumps the discussions with the municipalities up to the top, where you're coming up with an agreement with the municipalities on how taxation should occur well before the time we see a contract. I think I kind of prefer that way. I don't know if that is proper, but I certainly think it's necessary for protecting municipalities.
Mr. Pulaski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could ask Department of Law. I read this a little bit differently, and it could just be my reading at this hour in the morning. And the way it says is that the contract may not authorize a payment in lieu of property tax to a municipality before a final investment decision is made. The implication that I read on that is potentially if we wait until a final investment decision is made, then does the department in a contract have the authorization to do a payment in lieu of tax to a municipality, which I would read as bumping actually later in the process the engagement with municipalities. I think what we've tried to do is put them at the table up front through an administrative order and recognize clearly and consistently on the record that authorizing a payment in lieu of property tax to a municipality takes a change in law. And it should not be implied that somehow that can be done through a contract.
At what point in this overall process would you imagine that a change in law would be required?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. I believe I've said before, it's our intent to work with the Municipal Advisory Impact Board established by the administrative order. In my mind, ideally, we would be bringing changes or recommendations from that group to changes to the property tax back to the next legislative session in 2015 prior to the finalization of contracts.
Representative Hawker.
I'd just like to add to this, and I don't want to give away the state's position in this, but Frank, with all respect, what happened in SGDA is totally and completely irrelevant to whatever contract might be negotiated here and brought forward, or a PIL proposal and brought forward to the legislature. So what happened in SGDA is completely irrelevant to this conversation. But as that work is done with the Municipal Advisory Board, if I'm those folks, we look at FID occurring sometime out there about 2019 in the most optimistic light. As this project reaches the end of FEED, and if it really is going to FID, these guys are going to be starting to see the need for that PILT revenue to help them anticipate, to work with. And if I'm negotiating on behalf of the municipalities, I'm out there saying I want my PILT to not necessarily be something, to encompass a provision that anticipates what I'm going to need, and I want some PILT payments right up front here that would in fact predate the occurrence of the feed event. And this would be telling the municipalities, sorry guys, you can't do that. And I'm looking up and down that pipeline, looking at those small communities, I'm looking at the bigger communities as well. You're telling them that you don't get a shot at anything until the boots are on the ground and the project's begun. In fact, if I was them, I'd be really disappointed in the legislature shutting out that option to me.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, this is not addressing impact payments. We've talked before about impact payments are before the project, before construction starts. So this is talking about payment in lieu of taxes for property taxes, not impact payments. So the question is the contract going to come back to us with sideboard so that the property taxes don't change unless the project goes forward? Or are we saying that we're going to have something come back to us to approve, which is we're the tax-setting body, that will make sure that we are not changing the property tax structure before the project is sanctioned? It's not before it's built and before gas is flowing, but until project is sanctioned, so we know it's going forward. And that's the appropriate time for us to have a new tax structure is when the project is sanctioned, so it's going forward.
Representative Kalsong.
Thanks. I was just wondering if we could have legal counsel, since they're there, speak to the timeline mostly. I'm confused a little bit. Sorry.
Good morning. Chris Pogue, Department of Law. I apologize to Representative Seaton for spilling coffee on his limit. I guess I'll start by saying I agree with Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski that the Constitution vests the power to tax in you folks. And you folks have allowed that power to tax to be shared with only one other group of entities, which is municipal entities. Deputy Commissioner Pawlowski is a powerful guy, but he does not have the power to set taxes through a contract. The inference from this statute, however, is that after a final investment decision is made, he has that power. And I think Mr. Balrock, if you recall, his testimony was the power to tax may not be surrendered. So we would have to read this statute in light of the Constitution to say it couldn't create that power. But the inference drawn from the language is that it does. And so I think I would say, from my perspective, and I think this is consistent with Mr. Balrock's testimony, the power to tax cannot be contracted by Mr. Pawlowski in a contract. It is going to have to be set by you folks with the municipal entities involved.
Representative Seed.
Thank you. We're going to get a contract back with tax terms in it. We are going to get a contract back with tax terms in it. We'll approve it or not. So to say that we're allowing you to propose a contract and bring it to us with tax terms is, you shouldn't be able to bring us a contract if we would follow the Department of Law's advice, because you will have something in there with taxes. This just says that you can't propose to the legislature to have a term of the taxes that say that we are changing the property tax on this gas project before project sanction. In any case, you are going to come back to us with a contract, proposed contract, that is negotiated with you, and we haven't approved it, but it's going to have tax terms in it. And we're just saying that one of those tax terms can't be that the property tax is changing now, whether we get a project or not.
Mr. Pawlowski.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the intent I totally appreciate, and the point is not that the contract may or may not include tax terms. Those tax terms will be enacted by the legislature, not authorized by any administration. We would bring those terms to the legislature, just as we're doing in the legislation about setting a taxes gas terms. Those terms have to be voted on by the legislature prior to integration into a contract. So we would be, in my mind, referencing terms enacted by the legislature. The idea that the broader implications of any contract we bring back shouldn't be effective unless a project is built. I view that as different than what makes me, based on the advice from my legal counsel, uncomfortable with the implication, just in the way this language is phrased. It's not the underlying concern that you're expressing about a contract going into effect if a project is never built shouldn't have impacts on other situations around the state. I think that's a fair concept that makes a good deal of sense. It's just based on my conversation with my legal counsel, this implication makes us uncomfortable.
Representative?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, all I'd say is that Ledge Legal draws up the statute. This is the way they drew up the statute, to say that we were restricting the terms that could be proposed back to us, mm-hmm. that those terms couldn't go into effect until there was actually project sanction. And that's what our legal counsel has told us. They testified the other day that authorizing, taxing, we couldn't do that. That's not what this language does, even though you might want to interpret it that way, is may not, gives you the power somehow how else. And Mr. Bullock was very specific in saying that language saying that it may not authorize does not say that you are authorized. It simply limits your what you could propose in a contract to us. And so maybe we have the differences between lawyers but this is Ledge Legal's way of saying that within the statutory writing scheme that we have, this is the language to accomplish what was intended. And they testified to that the other day.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, you know, to try and come to some sort of an amicable solution, since our attorneys disagree, I mean, if you believe the implication to be that suddenly you do get, we're giving you taxing authority, why can't we just change it? Why can't we just add some sort of severability language into the corpus of this so that it makes it understandable and readable that we're not giving away taxing authority directly to the administration? Could we do that?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seed.
And since we have legal attorney here, maybe we could ask them, or maybe we should call Mr. Bullock, but we could do a conceptual amendment to add on line 6 before authorize, may not propose to authorize a payment in lieu of taxes. So if we went and said that the contract may not propose to authorize, that would mean that there is no ability to authorize. It's a proposal that's coming back to us. And if that is acceptable, that would get us the comfort we need to go forward. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd make that conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 31 on page 1, line 6, after the word not and before the word authorize, inserting the words proposed to. So it would now read, an agreement or contract associated with North Slope Gas Project may not propose to authorize a payment in lieu of property tax to a municipality before the final investment decision is made for the project.
Objection.
There's an objection. Representative Wilson. This is amendment, conceptual amendment 1 to amendment 31. Representative Wilson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It to me, that still says they can't do it. They can't even propose it before the FID. And they want to do it before then.
Okay, Mr. Pulaski.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, it is a bit of a chicken and egg. I'll pull it. I mean, avoiding the, if there's latitude to speak, kind of around the amendment to the amendment, you're right. We come back to the concern that Representative Hawker expressed earlier, that impact payments are one side of a PILT arrangement. It's not that they're divorced from each other. So we substantively may have that concern. I think we're doing a little bit of back and forth here about some of the language just on the power of the executive branch concept that causes us some concern in implication. As I said, the substance of the intent behind what Representative Seaton's trying to describe, I don't have a necessary disagreement with the intent outside of the issue that Representative Hawker and you have just raised, which is the order of these chicken and egg agreements. So.
Follow up, Rep. Poulsen.
Well, what about if it said, I'm just trying to figure out a way to make it okay, if they said before the 2015 legislative session. Of course, you still want to make those, you're still wanting to make those agreements or talk to the municipalities before the session, so at the session we can make those changes.
Question two.
I just would add, Mr. Chairman, that I don't think that same proposed two still carries with it the implication that they do have the authority. I don't think it solves the legal problem you're trying to do.
Any further discussion on conceptual amendment 1 to amendment 31?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so that I can understand the language, if on line 6, as we're considering this conceptual amendment, and maybe Deputy Commissioner Pulaski or Mr. Poe could respond to this. On line 6, what we're considering right now would say project may not propose to authorize a payment in lieu of property tax to municipality. But if it said take effect before a final investment decision is made for the project, I'm trying to understand what is trying to be accomplished here is that there wouldn't be some change in the way property taxes were calculated for municipalities in the event that there's no project actually happening, so then you wouldn't have to follow up and come back and recalculate and calibrate the taxes and go through that whole process. So, you know, for me, I'm just thinking, you know, if you had something like take effect in there, does that actually sort of solve the issue by it's not delaying when those negotiations can take place, instead it's delaying when the actual change to the tax would take place, which is what I think he hopes to avoid by this. Would that work?
Let's deal with the conceptual amendment to Amendment 31.
Thank you.
It was your objection?
That was mine.
Your objection. Do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
I'd withdraw the amendment if the committee doesn't think that that's going to be the solution to this. So I'd withdraw conceptual amendment number one.
Okay, conceptual amendment number one has been withdrawn. So we're back to the discussion on amendment 31. I would kind of direct members' attention to amendment number 15, if you have it in your stack. And this is where we number 15 is where we took the duties and responsibilities laid out in Administrative Order 269 and inserted them into statute verbatim. And
Mr. Chairman.
Line 12 of that Amendment 15. I can read it for folks. It's the second duty that we assigned to the Interim Advisory Board, and it says provide recommendations for changes to the oil and gas exploration production and pipeline transportation property taxes. So we've already asked the board to go out, have a discussion, and come back to us by December 15th on their recommendations. I guess I, Representative Seaton, I understand the intent of what you're trying to do. I think we need more information. We are still in the legislature. We are still the taxing authority. I mean, we have to write the law.
So that's just, I think we've kind of addressed this at one level, but Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that seeing agreement from the people from Department of Revenue, DNR, on this issue, that there's no intent to do this, I think that this discussion has given me comfort that that will be an issue that's well considered and won't slip through any cracks. And so, Mr. Chairman, rather than worry about the words to accomplish this, I'll withdraw Amendment Number 31.
Okay. Amendment Number 31 has been withdrawn. At this time, we're going to adjourn. Several members have another committee meeting that has issues that need to get addressed. We will adjourn. The next meeting is scheduled for 4:30 this afternoon in this room. And is there anything further from committee members? We'll see you back here at 4:30. We are adjourned.